as bait. That's why I say when it starts.
Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tite.
On opening night, our name in lights. Why we won't stop till we reach the top.
There was a time in the late 1970s and early 80s when Barry Manilow's music was ubiquitous. You'd hear it on Top 40 radio, on your television, and maybe even in your dentist's office. Songs like Mandy and Copacabana and I Write the Songs. Barry Manilow doesn't chart the same way he once did, but he still has millions of loyal fans and a new album called My Dream Duets.
Although he's still producing music, Barry Manilow has decided to slow down now that he's 73 years old. He says his current concert tour, which stops at the BMO Harris Bradley Center on Tuesday, will be his last. Ahead of that Milwaukee stop, we reached him by phone in California, and I asked him to speculate on why he's managed to do so well for so long in so many ways.
When I began all those years ago, I never really thought about becoming a performer or a singer. It never dawned on me. I got out of Brooklyn, and I knew I was going to hit music. I knew it was going to be music. I didn't know what. But I thought it would be in the background. I was very happy in the background, playing piano for people, conducting for them, doing their arrangements and orchestrations, maybe producing records. There was a couple of years there where I wrote jingles. Everything in the background. I was very happy being in the background. And by some miracle, I got a record deal. The only reason I took it was because it was the only way to get my songs out there, because it was the year of the singer-songwriter. Everybody was making records that they could sing and write songs. It was James Taylor. It was Carole King. And I got a record deal as a singer-songwriter, and I said, okay, I'll be able to get my songs out there on this record. And I thought, well, that would be the end of that. But I was wrong, because that album didn't make it. And I went on the road trying to promote it, and I had to get up on a stage with a band behind me and actually learn how to perform for an audience during that first tour. And it was torture. It was the most uncomfortable thing I had ever done, because I never studied it. I never thought about it. I didn't know what the hell to do up there on that stage. But the crazy part was the audiences didn't mind it. They liked the music. They liked that I was awkward and crazy, and they knew that I was trying my best, and they kept saying in their own way, keep going. We like what you're doing. And when the second album hit with Mandy on it, well, that was the big surprise. And from that moment on, I was a performer, a singer, and somebody on the road.
So that was the moment when the Barry Manilow that we know now really emerged.
That's right. During that tour, after the first horrible tour, after Mandy came out, I had to get serious about it, because it didn't seem like it was going to go away. I had to make friends with this fame and this performing job that had fallen into my lap. Now, you know, you would think that I'd be excited about it because so many people want that, but I didn't want that. I was very uncomfortable with it, but I had to make friends with it and figure out how the hell to do this job. And I did, and now I'm loving it, and I'm very grateful that there's still an audience out there that wants to hear what I have to say.
So when you were making that transition from being the producer and the songwriter and the guy in the background to having to step out into the spotlight, what did you have to do? It sounds like you were more of an introvert and you had to become an extrovert.
I did. I had to become an extrovert. And, you know, like I say, in the beginning, it was torture. But it was the audiences that kept cheering me on. Certainly the critics weren't helping. They saw that this guy didn't know what he was really doing up there, but the audiences didn't mind it. I give the credit to everything that's happened to me, to the fans and to the audiences that never, ever let me down.
Well, you also have some incredible talent to back that up, too. I mean, you are a really good songwriter. And you mentioned in the beginning of this interview, you know, you wrote jingles, you wrote commercials, you did film work, you know how to arrange, you know how to do a lot of the nuts and bolts of music that maybe a lot of performers don't know. And do you think that that helped you become who
Yes.
you are?
Yes, I think it was the thing that kept me interested and excited. Whether it was songs that I wrote or whether they were songs that Clive Davis found for me, it allowed me to do what I love to do, which is produce the records, arrange them for myself, learn how to produce a record in the recording studio, all that stuff. I was able to do the stuff that I loved even while I was performing and learning how to do that.
It almost sounds like that sustained you while you were having to start all over again as a performer.
Yeah, it was a second career. You know, these kids that I worked with on American Idol, you know, they're very young. And I wasn't 18 or 19 when Mandy hit. I was 29. I had already had a pretty solid career. And that's why it threw me so much.
I've talked to other musicians who've had that kind of shift where they were session musicians before, and then all of a sudden they're soloists. And it's like you say, they have to rethink who they are and how they relate to their music.
Yes, that's exactly what happened to me. I had to make friends with it, because otherwise it was going to be really awful if I didn't make friends with it. But the thing that happened was gratitude. That was the moment that it all changed. And from that moment on, you know, I embraced this career and was very grateful for it.
So I have to ask, what makes a good song for you? Whether it's one of your own or it's somebody else's song, what makes it good?
Well, for me as a performer these days, it's the lyric. And it's, that would be a surprising answer since I'm the composer. But as a performer, it's the lyric. As a composer, yes, the music is, you know, beautiful, wonderful, the best I can do. But really, as a performer, if you get a clunky lyric, you are in trouble. So it's really what makes a great song as a singer is the lyric.
Now, when you do your own work, how much of the lyric writing have you done and do you do now?
I've done a handful of songs. I've done a handful of lyrics. You know, maybe more than a handful. I did loads of them on a few albums, and, you know, I'm happy with them. But that's not my forte. I work with some great, great lyricists who really know how to do that. And I think I like it better when I can put a melody to somebody's great lyric.
And that's how it works for you? You get the lyric, and then the music comes? You never start with a tune?
Well, you start with the idea. That's the hard part as a songwriter. That's the bloodletting. What is this song going to be about? That's really the big question. That's where my collaborators and I work the hardest. What is this song going to say? Once we figure that out, then writing the song is fun.
I would imagine it would be. Does the song ever tell you what it's going to be about? As you're working on it, I'm sure there are times when things just get thrown out because they're not working.
Well, the ones that I struggle with, usually the audience or the listener can hear the struggle in the work. The ones that come real fast are the ones that have a shot at being popular. I think the listener can hear the struggle in the work, and I bet you that goes for you or for a writer or actors. The audience can tell when you're struggling. When it comes fast for me, I know I've got a shot at a popular song.
You haven't overthought it.
Yeah.
Are there songs that you wish you had written?
Oh, millions of them. Millions of them, you know, starting off with Jerome Kern's work and going to Irving Berlin and Cole Porter and Harold Arlen. And yeah, absolutely. That's where I come from, you see. I really come from the Great American Songbook and the songwriters that came before me. When the Beatles came in and they bridged the gap and they were writing wonderful songs and rock and roll, everything changed. And then after that, the art of songwriting took a nosedive, and now what we hear is great-sounding records, great rhythms, great machinery, but the art of writing a song, like Irving Berlin would have written, is gone, and that's sad.
And yet you see so many famous rock and roll and pop stars going back to that catalog.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing like it now.
No, and they, you know, the people that are writing, they don't even know what I'm talking about, because, you know, today's music isn't really about well-written melodies or well-written lyrics. It's really about great rhythm and great grooves, and they're irresistible.
And they're fun.
And they're fun. They're great.
But
I miss good songwriting.
Do you think that what you have done and what you're continuing to do will help fill that gap a little bit?
I doubt very much, you know, if we're going to ever go backwards. But I do what I can do. The album that just got nominated for a Grammy was called Night Songs, and it was just me at a piano singing like I would be in a bar, a piano bar. And I chose 11 or 12 of the great standards that were written by some of the greatest composers. And that's all I can do, is I can keep making records that maybe introduce people to those kinds of songs.
And is that the impetus behind tours like the one you're going to be on and be here for, is to help introduce new audiences to this as well as play to the fans who already know your work?
Well, it would be nice, but really the reason I'm doing this is to say thank you to the people who have been on my side for all these years. This is really the last big tour. I'm not retiring, and I'll be making records and doing one-nighters, but this is the last of the big tours. And really, I want to give them a show that's as filled with familiar songs as I can. Some of the songs I haven't done in so many years are going to be on this tour. That's really the impetus of this show, is to say goodbye and thank you.
Well, not goodbye forever, as you said.
No. But, you know, there are going to be cities out there that I probably won't visit the way I used to.
Well, that happens. But, you know, we're very glad that you chose Milwaukee as one of the stops.
But I've done Milwaukee so many times. They're wonderful, wonderful audiences for me there.
Well, we are so looking forward to it. And, Mr. Manilow, I cannot thank you enough for taking some time out of your morning to talk with us today. I so appreciate it.
Thank you, Bonnie. You're just great, great at this.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, dear.
Barry Manilow's latest album is My Dream Duets, and he'll play in support of it and probably include many of his dozens of other famous songs, maybe this one, in a concert Tuesday evening at the BMO Harris Bradley Center.